new engines, a new approach, and a new culture at Lycoming. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Michael Kraft, who is the Vice President for Research, Development, and Engineering at Lycoming Engines Division of Textron. And Lycoming had a number of announcements at Oshkosh this year that I wanted to pursue in a little more depth with Michael. Mike, thanks very much for taking a few minutes out to talk to our listeners today. I know you're headed for the beach in a couple hours.
Yes, that's right. Thanks, Paul. I really enjoy talking.
I think the biggest thing for most of us watching the announcements from Lycoming at Oshkosh was the announcement of the IE2 engine series, or as your engineering department, I guess, is called it IE squared. That at least lines up with what the abbreviation is. Tell us a little bit about what is different between this electronic engine control system and what we normally think of in the generic term FADEC.
Well, I mean, FADEC, you know, you start from the words FADEC, full authority digital electronic control. And this, you know, at the end of the game, if you look at the very base definition of it, what we're talking about here in the IE2 engine, it's not just the FADEC, the engine control, it's the entire engine concept. Is we didn't just place a controller onto the mechanical engine. We actually redesigned the mechanical engine to be optimized for the electronic controller. So the concept of embedding sensors into the engine that were required for the electronics to work allowed us to take, you know, a lot of the mechanical weight out, okay, while adding the functionality for the electronics. So it's not just to call the reason why we call it IE2 or integrated electronic engine. It's not a control. It's actually the electronics integrated into the engine concept. And that's really the major new element of this, is that we actually decided that it was time to change the mechanical engine to adapt to this technology.
Why? I kind of know the answer to this, I think, but tell me from an engineering standpoint within a company like Lycoming, you know, so many decades after automobiles have abandoned things like manual chokes and mixture knobs and timing controls and that sort of thing, have we still had them on certificated aircraft engines? Is a lot of that regulatory?
It's not regulatory in so much as, you know, the regulations are there for a good reason, and they ensure that we're all doing the right things to ensure that we have the highest level of reliability for flight. So it's not really regulatory. I mean, the regulatory sets the standard, but what really has prevented that kind of technology in automotive coming into aerospace, and once again, there's two parts of it. It's the technology, and then it's the affordability of the technology, is that to a large extent, the automotive systems didn't have the redundancies that would be required to be able to get regulatory approval. So, you know, in simple fashion, if the ECU on your car fails, you pull off to the side of the road. If your ECU on your aircraft fails, well, you have a much more serious problem on that. So by the very nature is that we have to have redundancies in the system. When you put the redundancies into the system, you then have to manage, I mean, quite literally, you have two computers looking at a set of sensors trying to decide what the correct action to take is. So now you have two computers, and if one says yes, the other one says no, how do you resolve that? So now you have a third level. So the large item that delayed the entry or you know, has the entry of the electronic controlled engines in aerospace later, or aerospace piston later than automotive, is this whole level of redundancy. And to achieve that level of redundancy, you need computing power. So you have a level of redundancy which would come with weight, okay, and to a large extent, computing power has come so far along that you now have the ability in the electronics today to have sufficient computing power and memory, okay, and the weight space that you can deal with for the piston aviation side. I mean, FADECs are not new for the turbine industry. What's different in the piston side is that you're dealing with, you know, a much smaller power plant at a lower, you know, price and cost. And to put a $250,000 FADEC onto one of those engines, well, I mean, it's the cost of your aircraft. So what's really changed is that the computing power has come up to speed, which enables us to put the redundancies in place and do that in a cost-effective fashion and satisfy the regulatory requirements. Now, that's a mouthful that I just said there, but I think that, you know, it's not that the it really was a lot of things had to converge to allow us to come to a cost-effective aviation solution that could meet all of the actually not just meet, but in some cases exceed the regulatory requirements.
Well, I have to say, though, that the last time I had an ECU fail in a car was 1976. Mm-hmm. I think that things have advanced so far that I think some of us have questioned for a while whether automotive standards weren't already, in terms of reliability of these systems, weren't already ahead of some of the more legacy systems doing the same jobs on aircraft engines.
That's true, but also the automotive, mainly driven by production economies of scale. So if you're going to build a million ECUs, which literally the automotive industry is doing, you can't afford to put out a defective ECU. So their requirement was really on the basis of they're producing so many and the recall cost was so high, is that the automotive industry really drove in a very high level of production control to ensure a consistent product. Now, from the aviation side, you're dealing with a different level of production. Okay, so, and our element is really driven more by the safety case and the ability of traceability in the event that there is a defect in the product. So you kind of have two different drivers between automotive and aviation coming to kind of the same conclusion. And that's another big element of the, say, what I mentioned before about the reliability and the safety case and meeting the redundancies, mm-hmm. is that you will find in our system that there are automotive-derived components. Okay, you also find out that the ECU is something very special. So what we did is we're leveraging the developments in automotives towards more reliable equipment, okay, particularly in the electronics side, into the system as well. So automotive developments, and as they have, you know, you said your last failure of an ECU was in 76, but there's been other elements in that that have also improved, which now allow us to leverage pretty much the best of automotive with what's needed for the redundant elements in the system. So it really is a lot of things happening at the same time, which allow us to bring this in. And one of those elements is the automotive components, just production-wise, have resulted in a much more predictable component for use. There's still a lot of elements in there that we need to address when the aviation eyes of the equipment. Mm-hmm. Your automobile isn't exposed to lightning strike.
Right.
Nor is it exposed to, you know, high radiation or high intensity radiation from radar and from other systems in your aircraft. So there are some very different elements that aren't in your automobile that we do have to incorporate into the systems for the aircraft.
I don't know. My car is exposed to radar pretty often, actually.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you about the rollout of IE2, because the initial product is going to be on a variation of the IO540. But I would assume, given the somewhat modular nature of Lycoming aircraft engines, that once it proves itself and is through all the regulatory hoops, it shouldn't be a real big deal to get it applied to all your other engines. Will IE2 very quickly replace the traditional legacy Lycoming line?
It'll evolve. It's a new product line that will evolve. I mean, there's a lot of aircraft out there that are still certified on the mechanical engines, and you know, there's no time frame that we say we're not producing mechanical engines anymore. You know, there's a certain segment of the market that is a very good solution. What we're talking about here is that it will evolve into covering all of our major product lines of, you know, the 4-6, the 8-cylinder engines, turboed and normally aspirated. So you're correct in your assessment. It is a very modular concept that can be propagated through the other parts of the product lines. We chose to do it on the TIO 540, the twin turbo 540 model, because that is our most complex engine. And actually, is by solving the challenges associated with that engine, we do have a good foundation for propagating that to less complex engines. So we're tackling the most complex problem first, because on the follow-on engines, we've addressed those issues already. And this is a new product line. But it doesn't discontinue the old product line, but as people expect this type of level of control, that'll become the norm as we continue on in years.
Well, I think what I hear you saying is that it has the potential to roll out fairly quickly through the other configurations and displacements. And I would think that from what you're telling me that it might very quickly displace the fully mechanical engine in the OEM market for you.
That's correct. I mean, once again, the OEMs have to certify the engine on their aircraft. So we're providing this initial solution. It's obviously a high horsepower solution for larger aircraft or higher performance aircraft. But, you know, as fast as they can absorb it, that'll be the critical issue. So We'll have a certification base on this twin turbo six-cylinder. It'll be, you know, readily applicable to other versions of the engine. And then it comes to a large extent is the OEMs will have to adapt their systems to accept the electronic engine as well.
Well, Mike, I think the Lycoming news at Oshkosh that was most exciting for me, other than the IE2, was a couple of the new engines, specific engines that are coming out from Lycoming. Let's talk about those when we come back from the break. My guest is Mike Kraft, Vice President for Research, Development, and Engineering at Lycoming. I'm Paul Plack. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Fly wise with the powerful Piper Mirage's pressurized comfort, six-seat cabin class sophistication, and long-range mission capability. Turbocharged 350-horsepower piston engine, maximum cruise speed 220 knots true, range 1,345 nautical miles, useful load 1,205 pounds, maximum operating altitude 25,000 feet. The Piper Mirage, because might is right. To learn more about the Mirage, log on to Piper.com or call 866-FLY-PIPER.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Platt, talking today with Mike Kraft, Vice President for Research, Development, and Engineering at Lycoming Engines. Mike, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the new engines Lycoming debuted at Oshkosh this year. One was that that somebody is finally going to break the monopoly grasp of these gold-plated engines from Austria in the light sport market. The IO233 LSA is based on a very legacy package from Lycoming, but in a new package that's designed to be optimized weight-wise and otherwise for the LSA market. Tell us about how that came to pass.
Well, that literally came to pass is we have a few kit builders in the office, and they were taking a look at what they had as options, and they got together and said, hey, you know, our existing O235 just isn't the right solution for an airplane. Why don't we do something? So literally with, you know, a pizza party in the guy's garage who's building his plane, we took down and we opened up a piece of paper and said, here's the O235, what could we do? And it was recently after last year's Oshkosh, and we just said, okay, let's go take a whack here, here, and here, and we found a way to take out 40 plus pounds from the existing O235, incorporate electronic spark, and get rid of the carburetor with a throttle-body fuel injector. So it was it was almost internal demand from the Lycoming engineering staff that said, hey, why don't we do something? And we kept the power section common with the O235 because they didn't want to sacrifice any reliability either. I mean, mm-hmm. the O235, I think the N2C model has a 2,400-hour TBO, and you know they didn't want to sacrifice that. But really, what they were looking was for less weight and no decrement in horsepower. And by the way, okay, as the fuel situation evolves, they don't want to be locked into 100 octane fuel, so it needs to be able to generate the power at lower octane ratings. So it really started as a ad hoc kind of skunkworks item, and they came back to me with a proposal, and I said, well, let's go. And what you see there at Oshkosh is a very effective effort of how we can do a rapid cycle development program.
Now, is the 233 just a new model designator, or is it actually a slightly different displacement from the O235?
It's a new model designator. We've made enough changes on it that it is a new engine. The displacement is basically the same as the 235. I mean, the power section is the same. We will be, you know, we've taken a close look at the compression ratio. So when you round the figures up, there will be no difference in displacement, but there are some, it's not the exact same displacement.
Well, I have to tell you, I have a number of friends who are home builders who have been looking, scratching their head in options in this power range, and they're going to be very pleased to have another option.
It is not nearly as complex as the IE2, but it was very much a fun project, and we're really glad to see it brought to market now.
Speaking of fun projects, let's talk about the O390 that is going into certification now.
IO390.
The IO390. Is that has its background and track record in the experimental market been of any help in the certification process? I think a lot of experimenters ask whether that is the case.
It was. you know, you don't have any flight test credit or you don't have any engine test credit in the experimental engines. I mean, that's as we proceed through that process, we do have to build conformed engines. But it allowed us to leverage, and it's an excellent model, is we put an IO390 out in the experimental market, and it allowed us to gain a lot of data on its performance, its characteristics, and what we would want to do with that as we brought it to certification. Eventually, the market interest came large enough that the sales and marketing side, well, let's give it a go. And it was a good base for us. It does give us a leg up. And that's really, you know, the whole model. You have the Thunderbolt product line from Lycomi, the experimental engines. That's really what you'll see, and the full intent of that is kind of an incubator for what can become certified product. So, yes, the experimental IO390 provided a base for this certified engine and allowed us to get a lot of experience to it. Does it accelerate the certification cycle? Not really, because, you know, there's a certain set of protocols we have to follow in that.
Okay. Now we get to what I think will probably be our last question today, but I wanted to ask you about changes at Lycomi. Ian, when he was talking to reporters at AirVenture, a couple of different times made reference to changes in the atmosphere at Lycomi. And I think when people have said either Lycomi or Continental maybe 5 years ago, in both cases, those brands evoked images of perhaps an over-reliance on older technology.
The Lycosaurus.
There you go. I wasn't going to say it.
Okay.
But if I understand you correctly, there are some changes in the air at Lycomi that have been very, very gratifying, especially to those on the product side.
Yes. I mean, what has been happening at Lycomi over the past few years is a large focus on the infrastructure of how the business runs. Is that if you walked into the plant today, you know, versus, you know, 5-6 years ago, what you would see is a dramatic change. We've focused very much on lean production concepts, very much on quality improvement, very much on the processes that make businesses run well. And as those elements have been put forward into the company, it's allowed us to run the company in a much more efficient basis. And what does that allow you to do? That allows you to take those savings, okay, that we were previously spending on, say, broken processes and chasing, you know, parts around and trying to get the right things in the right place. It allows you to take that and put it back into the business. So it allows us to now invest in items, of which my, you know, favorite item is R&D side. So what I hope that we can continue to show people is not just at this Oshkosh with some new products, but as an ongoing theme for Lycomi is that having that great infrastructure improvement at Lycomi allows us to put us into offering new products for the marketplace. And that's fundamentally to me is as head of engineering, that gets me very excited that we can now, instead of kind of focusing on what, you know, the term was Lycosaur, the old technology, is that we now have a great infrastructure base from which we can have new products coming out at the same. The Lycosaurs are also very reliable, so we want to put new products out there with the same level of reliability, integrity, and the vision of, you know, the bulletproof product in the future. And that's what allows us to do that.
Well, one of my favorite things at any aviation show is to go around to talk to some of the small engine developers. I was talking to, especially to the Rotomax rotor guys and at Oshkosh, and also Power Plant Developments, which, you know, they have the Gemini diesel coming out.
Yep.
And every time I walk away from an extended discussion with these guys about what their issues are bringing their products to market, I have to note that it is great to be a division of Textron Company when it comes to getting through the Part 23 process or even just bringing an experimental engine to market.
Yes, I mean, we have a great, I mean, Lycomi Engines is ultimately part of the Textron group, and we're able to, not only within Lycomi, with, you know, we have the fantastic thing that Lycomi has in the aviation world is we've got this fantastic infrastructure to be able to test and simulate engines in the environment that they're intended for use. So, you know, our dynos aren't just dynos connected up to a small dyno. We have the ability to simulate altitude. We have the ability to simulate motoring properties. You know, our flight stands have the ability to simulate angles of attack and all variety of conditions. So we have that within Lycomi, but we also have the ability to leverage some of these advanced development activities within the Textron enterprise. And that's a pretty big resource to draw from, particularly on materials development, on electronics, for instance. We can leverage all those items together. the efforts of the small developers are also great too, because you know we circulate these shows too, and we're watching to see what people come up with and those new ideas, and there's a lot of nuggets out there. And what I hope that you everyone will continue to see is that Lycoming is very focused on finding what the appropriate technology is, how you can put it together, and how do you get an engine, you know, that'll pass certification. So, you know, we welcome these guys doing that. They bring great ideas to us, and, you know, we look for them. We look through the automotive to consolidate these and bring these into to something along with that Lycosaur. You know, so we want to modernize the Lycosaur into something that's very modern without sacrificing the reliability.
Well, Mike, at some point, we need to get together maybe into the fall here and have another discussion and talk about flex fuel, because we never even really got into that at this point. But I know Lycoming is working in that area as well. I want to thank you for taking a few minutes out for our listeners to flesh out some of these things they saw at Oshkosh, and have a great time at the beach.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Paul.
My guest has been Mike Kraft, who is the Vice President for Research, Development, and Engineering at Lycoming Engines. You can find out more about the company at www.lycoming.textron.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. You can find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.